All right, my friends, welcome back to another episode of the Build Show podcast. That's right. It's my weekly time to get together with you guys and go deep. We've had a lot of fun this new season of the podcast because in years past, I didn't have a whole lot of guests. You know, I would have maybe my business partner, Tim, in the building side. I'd have Steve, who's my CFO. I'd have a few people on. But, you know, this season, I've had my buddy Mark setting me up with some really big key industry people that are really smart but don't necessarily have a big public face, right? And so today's guest is one of those folks who has been around the building science block, has a lot of great knowledge, but you may not have heard of my guest before. So we're going to be jumping in here in just a minute with Chris Conway, who's out of Virginia and has been almost for two decades now working on high performance buildings, both retrofit and new construction. We're going to be talking to Chris specifically about what he's done in the multifamily world and the low-income world, and I think we're going to get some really valuable insights from Chris and really some interesting perspective from someone on the rating side of things, helping us on the building side of things. With that being said, today's Build Show, all about energy rating and what we can learn from a really smart rater. Let's get going. Guys, before we jump in with Chris, let me say a big thanks to ViewRail, our sponsor for today's podcast. If you're not familiar with this company, this is a family-owned company that makes their products right in the heart of America. I've been to their plant before. They've grown quite a bit. Really fascinating story. The owner of the company is a former youth pastor that was selling stair parts out of his garage and started this online company. And I think he was really just doing it because he wasn't making much money at the church. He had a growing family. And all of a sudden, 20 years later now, he's got a giant company with Americans building really cool things for our houses. So one of the things that you've probably seen me make some videos about is the ViewRail flight system. A very modern staircase in a box shipped to your job site that you put together where you, as a local builder that could be really anywhere in the U.S., might have a hard time finding someone to fabricate wood and metal and glass handrails and all these cool things they can put together that makes for a bomber modern staircase. You might have a hard time finding all those subs locally, but these guys can do it in their factory, ship it out to you. You put it all together like a big parts kit, basically, over the course of 2, maybe 3 days, and you look like an absolute craftsman hero because you've got this incredible signature piece in your clients' houses. They've got a bunch of other products, too, between interior and exterior rails. They still have a huge stair parts company as well. So go check out ViewRail. Really, really neat people. And, of course, if you're coming to the International Builder Show, they're probably going to have an amazing display like they've had the last couple of years. So go check them out. All right, guys, let's jump in with our guest, Chris Conway. Chris, thanks for joining me today, brother.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it, brother.
So, Chris, give us a quick background. You and I were talking before the podcast started. I didn't realize you actually were a veteran for many years. Thank you for all of your service to our great nation. And I suspect we have quite a few builders and quite a few listeners that are veterans, so thank you for your service as well. But talk to me about your transition from the services to the building and specifically the high-performance rating world.
Sure. So it was 2008. I was standing at the doorstep of the Pentagon, just got done working on the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program as a contracting officer.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm standing there and I'm like, what did I just do?
2008 was not a good year in the building industry.
2008 was a little rough.
Yeah, it was hard.
Especially for a small guy that had never really was in the construction industry.
Okay.
You know, I just helped my dad build furniture,
mm-hmm.
And that's really all I had. But I wanted to do something where I wasn't moving paper from this side to this side.
Yeah.
Very important for me.
Something tangible.
Yeah, I wanted to feel it. I wanted to see it. Like, look at that wall, you know? That, I did that today.
Yep.
So that was my motivation. Now, I didn't do great, because that housing crisis was a bit of a kick in the pants.
Boy,
especially for guys at the bottom.
Yeah, for me too.
Yeah. And so I looked around and I found that I really enjoyed just the idea, the process, the thoughts of making buildings better.
Okay.
I didn't know what that meant though. And so I started looking around and I started to come across the occasional things like Energy Star for homes, Earthcraft out of South Face Energy Institute.
Yep.
BPI, ResNet. You know, I was like, okay, now these guys are speaking my language.
So let me pause you for one sec, just in case our listeners don't know. I know these terms, but not everybody does. BPI, Building Performance Institute, right? And this is a body, an organization of people that are really focused on the existing home market and how can people increase the efficiency, the comfort, reduce their energy bills, reduce their draftiness, all these things. And so they've got this amazing program, I think it's BPI.org, by the way, to train people on how to become raters. And I believe, if I'm wrong, Chris, don't they also have a full training program for people that are interested in doing weatherization programs and insulation upgrades and air sealing and all that kind of stuff, right?
They sure do. They have a whole portfolio of excellent resources for people that are interested into getting into this existing home market.
Yep.
They teach you a lot of good stuff.
Yep.
They teach you about the complexities of doing work in homes with gas, the dangers that you can have.
That's right. Backdrafting is a big deal.
It is a massive deal.
Yeah, so that's BPI, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I wanted to also have you define ResNet, and what does ResNet do?
So ResNet is a residential energy services network, and it's based, and they pride themselves on getting what's called a HERS rater, a home energy rating system, a rater.
Okay.
And what they do is primarily, at least my work through them, has been in the new construction market.
Yep, that's what I think of them for too.
And so they model. It's all about energy modeling, verification of the energy modeled, the items that need to be looked at, blower doors, duct blasters, ventilation, stuff like that.
So in other words, not just saying that, you know, you're a production builder and you build a good home, but actually being able to prove it. Just like, you know, when you buy a new car, there's a sticker on there that says, hey, as a manufacturer, I've met the EPA guidelines to show what the highway fuel efficiency is, what the city fuel efficiency is. It helps us as consumers to know, okay, well, I know what I'm getting into. And the same is really true for houses as well. This home energy rating score allows us to go, okay, this is a house that's going to use less energy than, let's say, a standard code-built house, which might have gotten a score of a 100. I forget which code the 100 score was based off, the 2008 code or something like that, right?
Yeah, 2006, I think.
2006. But a lot of builders, and I suspect a lot of the buildings you're working on, are like a score of 50, meaning they're using like half the energy that a house with a score of 100 might use on that HERS rating, right?
I started at houses that had 120, 150 and in the existing market. But when we're doing new, we're absolutely, on average, we're in the mid to low 60s average.
That's awesome.
But we have a lot of homes that I mean, we're even below zero on a lot of our homes.
Holy cow, that's amazing. And then if I understand it right, Chris, for many, many years, you actually focused on multifamily, and not just multifamily, but pretty affordable multifamily. Is that right?
It is. I gravitate, having a background in the military, I kind of gravitated towards the low-income affordable housing community.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost an extension of like the military of service.
Yeah.
Sure. So I just naturally gravitated towards that environment. And what I think made me be able to grow in that world was the fact that they held on to their buildings.
Hmm.
And so they were very interested in the fact of finding the right answer, not the right answer for today or for the install cost, but they're going to hold on to that building for 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very open, for the most part, of thinking about how is this going to affect the long term. And that struck real well with me. And I think I was able to develop a community to where I had a really good base of developers and builders.
That's fantastic. Give me a couple of examples of things that you might recommend or do or say when it came to, let's say, some of these lower income, affordable multifamily, that it's a higher upfront cost, but you're able to show or able to convince them that, oh, this is definitely the right thing if I'm going to hold this building for two decades or longer?
So one of the first thing is convincing hearts and minds. So I spend a lot of time with project teams, of which I would be in meetings. They're 30 to 40 people strong. So it's a lot of people to get moving in the same direction.
Yeah.
Which is, doesn't sound like much of like just getting people to focus on how to execute this stuff, but it really is.
Yeah.
Because if there's no holistic approach, then it just doesn't happen.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of preparation and partnership that starts. So once I have them captivated and understanding we have a goal, that's when I come after them with, hey, we need to smarten up here in the Mid-Atlantic. We're in a mixed humid climate region. We need to be focusing on our ventilation strategies and our dehumidification strategies.
Interesting. I wouldn't think of dehumidification in your climate. That is a big deal, isn't it?
It is. And especially when we start tightening up our whole building envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I like to think about multifamily is just boxes with inside of a big box.
Yeah.
We like it to make it more confusing. There's a lot of moving parts. But in the end, it's just boxes within boxes.
Yep.
But we're making every box tight.
Mm-hmm.
Every box is not communicating like it used to.
Right.
And so ventilation became a really big discussion point for a long time. And once we nailed that down, we started to realize that when you start to make these units tighter, well insulated, less drying potential, what would happen is we would capture a lot more moisture.
I bet.
And so we went through a long period of time where we had these frequent discussions about long-term durability and the correct application of dehumidification. So
fascinating.
It was quite a deal, which when I work in condos, those types of conversations aren't even allowed to be on the table, you know, because it's a new piece of equipment. You know, that's not stuff they really want to deal with.
Right. So on the multifamilies you were working on, would each individual unit have its own equipment for HVAC, for ventilation, and for dehumidification? Or were you working with some type of centralized equipment that would feed each one of these boxes within a box?
Project dependent. But if you were to ask me what is the ideal, and this is where I follow the Joe Stiebrick ideal world.
I like this.
For multifamily.
So what is the ideal? I like that. That's a great question. Yes, answer that question.
The ideal is every unit is its own.
Okay.
It has its own ventilation strategy. It's got its own source.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its own dehumidification, its own heating and cooling, and the units are compartmentalized so that there is minimal connection between one unit and another.
Smart.
That was my ideal. That's the ideal scenario. Now, a lot of reasons for sometimes developers don't want to go that way. So then they switch to centralized ventilation systems. That's a big one, like the DOAS, direct outside air systems. Big old fan, big old heating and cooling on the roof, and it'll serve 30, 40 units at a time.
Holy cow.
It brings in 30 to 40 CFM of air. You know, just 30 to 40 milk crates worth of fresh air constantly.
Into every unit, basically.
Into every single unit, yeah.
Huh. And in those strategies, were you mainly pressurizing those units and using leakage as a way for that air to escape? Or was there a return out of each one of those units as well?
So for the longest time, it was just a pressurized situation. You know, we were constantly hitting, you know, positive, you know, 1.5 Pascal per unit. So the whole building would be pressurized to a small extent.
Mm-hmm.
But that was very much offset by bath fans, you know, opening and closing doors, people opening windows. So in the end, the building, although pressurized in its like perfect state, actually was a lot closer to zero, and more subject to wind pressures and things like that.
Yeah,
But yeah,
interesting.
positive pressure is the key for
Okay.
sure.
So then let's move from multifamily to single family, and this actually is good timing because if I remember correctly, you and your bride, Nikki, are in the cusp of building a new home. So how do you take all that 2 decades of knowledge in multifamily and tell me about some of the strategies that you're employing in building your new house?
So it's going to be basically our four hands, mine and my wife. And
Okay.
we're going to do the best that we can to not screw it up so bad. That's really my goal. Let's just be honest. I'm not a builder, I'm a raider. But I have a very ambitious wife, and I'm looking to try to build our future home. So we're going to start there. So building it, designing it so that a person could build it with a one or two man show is my ultimate goal. But within that, it's envelope and heating and cooling. Those are the investments that I'm making right off the bat. We have background, or I have background in passive house structures, every green building program you can shake a stick at, we have some sort of familiarity. And so I'm going to try to my best to employ as many of the techniques that I've learned over the years. So while still making it buildable for the average person.
That's
So that's really my
affordability
goal.
is key, especially when we were talking about our own houses, not a client's house, right?
That's right.
That's for sure. So then, what airtightness strategy are you going for? Are you doing some of the methods that you see Steve Basic and Jake Bruton doing, where they're using, let's say, zip system sheathing as the air barrier on the outside?
So yeah, so that's where we're going.
Okay.
So Monopoly framing
Oh, you're gonna
is
Monopoly framing. Fantastic.
we are. So I first saw that back on Joe Stebrick and Betsy's NIST house in Maryland. Fantastic. And I looked at it and I said, brilliant. And then I saw you on a video with a gentleman. He was doing his Monopoly framing. It's just, to me, that's the way to go.
Yeah, I've made quite a few Monopoly framing videos recently, and I really feel like a lot of builders are starting to adopt the Monopoly. And back to Joe Stebrick, it's his concept. It's called Perfect Wall. And I just kind of like the term Monopoly framing because it made sense to me, especially in the roof to wall transition. But back to the original concept, I know you and I both have spent a lot of time under Joe's tutelage and seen him speak and talk. Joe talks about Perfect Wall, and for me, it took me, several 4 or 5 years of hearing him talk about it before I totally understood it and figured out how to implement it. But he basically says, look, the perfect wall, and we're thinking about a wood-framed building here in particular, would have all the control layers on the outside of the wall. And what do we need to control? We need to control water, air, vapor, and thermal, right? So if we put our membrane on the outside of the wood wall that's going to control the air and the water, then vapor is kind of taken care of at that point because we've already taken care of the water and we've taken care of the air. And then if we put all of our insulation outboard of that on the outside of the wall, well, now that's the perfect wall. And so I still insulate it on the inside of my house. But if we take that wall and transition to roof, the way to make a transition and still maintain that continuity is without any overhangs. It's just making that monopoly piece. And the same is true with the slab. We fold that wall down, put the insulation down towards the ground, and then the control layers and the floor, and boom, now you've got the perfect building all the way around. And so I've changed that name to Monopoly framing just because I like it, but it's really Joe's concept.
It is. I really like that. And so we're going to end up doing, we're kind of back and forth right now. I'm in the middle of modeling it, but probably a 2x8 bottom plate with 2x4 staggered studs.
Cool.
I really want to get into that timber HP insulation,
Oh yeah, okay.
zip sheathing on the walls and on the roof deck. It's going to be a mono pitch, so it's going to be shed style.
Okay. Are you gonna frame the building too?
I am. I'm
Okay.
hoping to.
Wow, that's awesome, Chris.
I've already bought my pulleys so I can
Oh
lift up
man.
16-foot wall by myself.
Dang.
But, you know, the zip rain screen, likely some Edco metal siding. Cool. Love that stuff.
That is good stuff.
Metal roof as well. Haven't decided on what my continuous layer of insulation is on the roof deck yet. So it's going to be R9 zip.
Okay.
On the walls.
On the walls. Gotcha.
Well, haven't figured out where I'm going to land with the roof deck insulation yet, but then we are going to spray foam the cavities on the inside.
Okay.
So that's pretty much, and we're going to do fully insulated slab, with radiant floor heating.
We have a basement. You're building in Virginia, right?
Building in Virginia, but slab only.
Slab only. Okay. Gotcha.
And that's easier for me.
Yeah.
And then it allows for a lot of, as I get older, I like everything to be just on grade.
Yeah.
You know, and everything's acceptable.
We do a raft slab where you put the insulation down and then you pour your concrete on top of that, or how will you insulate that slab, Chris?
Yep. That's exactly how I'm going to do that.
Okay.
So going to insulate it probably in the neighborhood of R15. Okay. Everywhere.
Yep.
If not R10 underneath the whole slab and then R15 on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the middle of optimizing all that. So once I get that nailed down, then the radiant flooring, maybe an Uponor water heater, and kind of go from there.
Okay. Love it, man. Let me change gears. Let me ask you, from a builder asking a raider, how can builders better utilize raiders like you, Chris, and all of your kinsmen that are, let's say, ResNet certified or BPI certified, really ResNet certified when we're thinking about new construction? How can we utilize you better at that design and pre-construction phase to make sure that we're building better buildings and that when we get to the commissioning phase, that we're actually getting the results that we were hoping for?
Bring us in early. Often.
Yeah.
Pick their brain. You know, ask them, what is it that you see are the common pain points for us builders? Where do we mess up? What can we do to get in front of that? Who are our most important trades? Like, do we need to have special communication with specific trades about the overall performance of this building in the end?
Yep.
You know, and really start to pick their brain about best practices. Ask for pictures. You know, in my neck of the woods, we don't all speak the same language.
Hmm.
I tell you what, a picture speaks 1,000 words no matter what language you speak.
Boy, that's for sure.
And that's very important. So early and often, a lot of communication and pictures and best practice.
Yeah, okay. That's really good. That's great advice. How do you recommend people find someone locally to work with, whether it's ResNet or BPI?
So if I were looking for somebody, I would go to each of their websites. ResNet, I think it's ResNet.org.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and BPI.org. And you can go there right at the top of each. There's an area where you can find your local raider. And once you kind of dive in there, you have the ability to hone in either with city or zip code or state.
Yep.
And you can kind of find out who's near you, who's around you.
Yeah. And the reason why you want someone local is because you want someone to be able to visit with you in the job site. You need somebody who owns a blower door, who's going to be able to come out and test your buildings. You want someone who's got the time to come out with that blower door and turn it on and pressurize it. And let's together look for some leaks and figure out how we can do it better. You know, my local guy here, who's my version of you, Chris, is named Sean, that I've worked with for many, many years. You know, Sean Harris, probably. You know, I remember one of my very first houses I built in 05, I did a full open cell spray foam exterior wall and roof assembly. And I thought, oh, I'm going to crush it on my blower door. Like I was expecting a super tight, there was no passive house at that time, but I was thinking, oh, it'll be a, you know, a 1 or 1.5. What was like a 3 point something? And I was severely disappointed. And I remember, I don't think I was there when Sean did that blower door. He sent me the test and I was like, what? This can't be right. You know, what'd you do wrong?
Yeah, did you close all the windows or what?
Yeah, would you leave a door open for this test or something? But, you know, in working with him over several houses and trying different things and different products and different execution style, you know, I don't know, maybe our fourth or fifth house, he was like, why don't we bring the fog machine out and we'll, you know, do what? You can do that? I didn't know you could do that. So, you know, having somebody locally like you, Chris, who's smart, who's been around the block, who's seen, you know, lots of different building styles, lots of different photos, that was really key to my learning success of trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to tighten up these buildings? And does this small amount of whatever it is make a difference? You know, whether it's sealing your bottom plate to the foundation really well, whether it's, you know, getting different window styles, whether it's double hungs or whether it's fixed or casements. And that experience with a raider who has a blower door and can help you walk through that process, super invaluable to a builder.
I agree. And if you can get one that has an infrared camera, even better.
Even better, yeah. That's a great
even
point.
Even better.
That is a great point. We don't, I don't do that very often, but you could use that infrared camera along with a blower door, as long as you've got a, let's say, a 20 degree delta between inside and out, and you could really see that dark, you know, blue or dark red, let's say, depending on what it is, coming in or leaving, that would help visualize that airflow going through the building, right?
Absolutely. It is key for efficient identification of any sort of air leaks or thermal breaks. You know, it is absolutely key. What's fantastic is you can buy them, you know, those clear ones you can put on your phones for like $350 now.
Yeah, and you can take pictures with your phone too, which is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It really is a very, when I bought mine back in the day, it was seven grand, and I thought I was really something.
I bet you did.
The new $350 FLIR for my phone is way better than that $7,000 camera.
That's crazy. And I think that's especially true with existing buildings too, right? Because now, you know, you may not be able to see things very well on an existing building like you might do in a house that's in framing that you're doing a blower door test when the air barrier is up, but it's not complete. So I bet you could really see, hey, I'm seeing airflow out of these outlets. Look at this temperature difference. Or I'm seeing airflow here underneath your baseboard. Those kinds of things would really show up on the FLIR camera, wouldn't they?
They would. One of my most favorite things is when I was day in and day out a home energy raider, kind of an auditor, and I would go in and you could see there was tension in the air. There was disagreement. Somebody wanted to change the windows and somebody wanted to add insulation in the attic. So it was on. And so with that infrared camera, you could show them visually and without words, with nothing. They could see the difference and then they could make the decision themselves. And that was very key because there's no need to get in the middle of a dispute, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet that's right. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. You could really help settle that argument by showing those massive differences. Yeah. That's pretty fascinating.
And I saved a lot of people money because a lot of people thought their windows were terrible. And I'm like, your windows aren't bad. It's the giant gap around the window that was chinked or shoved some fiberglass insulation in there.
Yep.
And not foamed or caulked.
Yeah.
And so I've saved tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of window replacements just by air sealing around the windows.
Yeah, because it's an air sealing job more than a replacement job, really, right?
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Good stuff. Chris, really appreciate you taking some time with us today. Is there anything that I didn't touch on that you want to touch on when it comes to raiders and builders working together and helping us to better understand how to build high performance buildings?
Don't, like we alluded to earlier, don't be afraid to engage us. It is our lifeblood to help buildings perform and reach their potential.
Yep.
And so I've done probably in the neighborhood of 12,000 blower door tests in my time. And so when have that much experience, when anybody has that much experience, you tap into them. Yeah. Don't be afraid of them. They want to tell you, trust me, they want to work with you and tell you how to be better, because it only makes your life and the client's life a lot better.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of us refrigerators.
Yeah, that's right. Chris, if somebody wants to see what's going on with you or touch base with you specifically, is there a social media handle? Is there a way to get a hold of you for our listeners out there?
So probably LinkedIn is my largest social media platform.
Okay, so it's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, Conway, C-O-N-W-A-Y, right?
Correct.
And what do you call your business, Chris? Is it just Chris Conway?
Conway Energy.
Conway Energy. Okay, there you go. Conway Energy.
Yep.
Awesome. So look them up on LinkedIn, people. That's the way to do it. And if you want to see Chris's especially handsome beard and my clean-shaven face, by the way, you can watch the podcast over on thebuildshow.com. Chris, thank you for being on the podcast with me. Really appreciate it, man. And I'm sure that I will see you at the next time we see Joe Stebrick speak together next, which is where I tend to run into you most.
Yes, sir. It was a pleasure.
All right, brother. Have a great day, man. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on your commutes to your job site, on the way back to the office from the job. I try not to go more than 30, 40 minutes or so in this podcast, because I don't want to do the Joe Rogan 3-hour style podcast. I want to try and get in and get some good information for you and have some good conversations and get back to it. So with that being said, guys, if this is your first time listening, we publish every single Friday to all the major places. Plus, we're publishing the video version of this over on thebuildshow.com. And by the way, we also have now on thebuildshow.com the Unbuild It podcast with my buddy Jake Bruton, Steve Basic, and Peter Yost. Fantastic three hosts that sometimes bring other people on. But they got really good building science content for you as well. So go check out the Unbuild It podcast over on thebuildshow.com. That being said, guys, follow us on TikTok or Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.